You're listening to episode 3 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia.
David, should we announce our iTunes news?
We should. I guess the iTunes news is that we're on iTunes, and evidently, given our past experiences, I would like to thank Apple for speeding up the process. I think it only took us about 48 hours before they approved the upload, and now we have a full feed on iTunes.
That's right. That's pretty exciting. I'm glad to see that. Glad that they did that quickly, too. That's always nice. And so you can search for us in iTunes. Just look for the UAV Digest. Or you can visit the UAVDigest.com, where you'll find the little iTunes icon that you can click and subscribe that way. We also have icons now on our webpage for Twitter and Facebook as well. So we've also submitted this podcast to some other podcast directories, but if we are not in your favorite one, let us know and we'll take care of that. All right, with that, David, what are we going to be talking about this week?
Well, let's see. In this episode, we've got a quadcopter that's also an airplane. We're chasing storms and other things with disposable UAVs, using UAVs in place of satellites, and the tiny town in Colorado that wants to pay you to shoot down drones.
All right, sounds good. Let's get started. Gizmag.com writes, what do you get when you cross a quadcopter with a plane? Well, the answer is this Latitude Engineering HQ. And for takeoffs and landings and for hovering, the Latitude HQ uses 4 horizontally mounted propellers, okay, just like a normal quadcopter. And they're driven by, each one has got its own individual motor, and they have a common power cell from, 2 5-cell, 11,000 milliamp lithium polymer battery packs. David, when you look at this thing, does it remind you of anything?
Harking back to the days of something like a P-38.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought of when I saw this.
They took the style of a twin-boomed aircraft, and where you normally would have propellers, if anyone knows what a P-38 looks like or a P-61 or any sort of twin-boomed aircraft, they pushed that boom even farther forward of the nose, and that's where 2 rotors are, and then there are 2 rotors back on the tail, and then in between the booms, we have a 5-horsepower, 4-stroke gas engine.
A 0.5 horsepower, right?
0.5 horsepower, 4-stroke gas engine to propel the aircraft forward. So once you get up to take off with the electric motors, you start pushing forward with the gas motor, and then I guess you shut off the electric motors.
And this thing can really move along pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah, well, according to the stats, it's 40 knots, which is 46 miles an hour, which is a heck of a lot faster than most quadcopters go.
And this thing has a pretty good range. I guess it can keep that up for up to 15 hours. That's some pretty serious range.
That's a lot of endurance. And I'm wondering what the endurance is on the lithium ion, the lithium polymer batteries. And I wonder what kind of range you get or endurance you get if you are stopping and starting. So for a flight pattern where you're taking off and then you're flying quickly to a spot and then hovering there for an extended period of time, there's some really unique applications. It's kind of the best of both worlds, and it sounds like Latitude Engineering actually has gotten good performance out of both aspects. Usually when there's a compromised aircraft like this, usually you get the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, sure. Now, I noticed from the photo in the Latitude Engineering website that its paint scheme is kind of a blue and grayish sort of camouflage kind of look. So I don't know if they're sort of anticipating military applications or it's just kind of the colors they like.
Well, they are under a contract with the United States Navy for one. If you scroll down further in the article, they have an all-black one, too, which looks a bit sinister, I think. But so they are working on trying to get a naval aircraft out of it, or you could purchase your own for a whopping $60,000.
My goodness. Yeah, I see in the article it says that there are two versions of this HQ that are under development. One has a composite airframe that's made of carbon fiber skinned foam and balsa, and it's got some ABS plastic in there. So it weighs about 25 pounds, payload up to 2 pounds, it says. So I guess that would kind of work for a camera or some kind of a video sensor or something of that sort.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, if you're the Navy, you could use it off of smaller ships, and the vertical takeoff and landing is really advantageous because you're not building something like with the Scan Eagle, where you have a giant net to catch the drone back. You can actually hover it over the deck, and somebody could reach up and get it. So, I think we're going to follow this one because I think it ranks on the cool meter.
It does. It's very nice looking, and there's also a larger model that weighs 60 pounds, it says, and can carry up to 8 pounds as a payload. And that does have that 5-horsepower engine. That's probably what you were thinking of, David. That one has got a 5-horsepower engine, that larger model.
Thanks, buddy, for saving me on that one.
Very good. All right. We also see something this past week that's kind of interesting from National Geographic. Cheap disposable drones are the new storm chasers, it says. Now, some environments are just simply too hazardous for flying, or at least they introduce a lot of hazards, including things like wildfires and volcanic eruptions, things like that. And, you know, these represent obviously perfect opportunities for drones to provide the kind of observation capability that you'd like to avoid with a manned aircraft. And in fact, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, has been using low-cost disposable unmanned systems for weather observation, David.
Yeah, well, why put a manned system in jeopardy when you can get all the data from a disposable or a inexpensive drone, where if you lose it, you're getting the data, but you're not getting any sort of penalty or risking any lives. So the first one they've brought about, actually, the National Geographic article actually has quite a few different examples. The first one is the Research and Engineering Center for Unmanned Vehicles. It has the Data Hawk, and NOAA's using it to chart ice melts. And it looks like a small, if you had, growing up, you had one of those giant styrofoam gliders. It kind of looks like one of those with an engine and a small camera and some atmospheric measurement equipment. And if they lose it, it's not really any harm. So that's a good one. And it could also drop sensors into the water, so that you're flying over an area, you can drop a sensor into the water, and then you have that targeting location for study.
Yeah, it's kind of a unique mission. I guess what this thing does is it's directed to a spot where it actually lands in the water and floats, kind of like a buoy. And as you mentioned, David, then it can drop sensors into the water and make various measurements and so forth. And again, the idea here is the data collection function and not ever retrieving the thing. Interesting application.
So the next one's really cool. You want to take that one?
The paper drone. This comes out of the University of Queensland in Australia. And this is something that, well, you know, it looks exactly like the old paper airplanes that you used to make as a kid. What they've done here is they've designed a plane that maybe would cost $50 total, and it's made from a biodegradable paper. Now, interestingly, the electronics, they print those directly onto the body of the plane, and it has small voice coil actuators for steering. So very light, hopefully very inexpensive, and it could present some interesting applications. And here again, it's disposable in that the price is pretty low, and it's, for the most part, except for the electronics, biodegradable. And I guess they do mention that with regard to those electronics, that they realize they have an issue that in some cases electronics can be kind of hazardous material, and so they have to take a look at that. But otherwise, the thing is biodegradable.
And that's always important. And besides, it would be really cool if you had a paper airplane contest to sneak this one in.
Yeah, you could really freak out the competition.
Though I got to admit, growing up and having a maple tree in the backyard, the next one I think is also on the cool meter, which is the maple seed, which looks like a giant maple seed. And if anybody's actually had access to a maple tree, they have seeds that look like one-bladed helicopters. And you threw them up in the air and you watched them come down. Well, the Samara prototype is a single-purpose drone that you can drop, and it floats down slowly on its one wing, spinning like a helicopter or a maple seed, gathering data and sending it back via radio.
Yeah, I think this is a very clever and interesting idea. I think it would be fun to know sort of the genesis of this idea, who kind of came up with this or thought of this. And I imagine this would be for really specific kinds of purposes. In other words, it sounds like it'd be something that would be dropped from aloft and, you know, complete its mission as it whirligigs its way back to the ground. I don't know how, you know, if it's maneuverable or anything like that, but it sounds like an interesting concept.
Part of the article is using these kind of vehicles for wildfires or hurricanes. And this is not new. NASA flew a Global Hawk in 2010 over the Atlantic Hurricane of Earl. But you could imagine in the future a Global Hawk flying above the hurricane in the out. So it's not like our traditional C-130 hurricane hunters that fly into the hurricane, through the eye wall, and then back out. The Global Hawk flew above the hurricane, and you can imagine it having sort of a bomb bay full of whirligig drones. And you know, over a certain port, you drop them into the hurricane, and with the winds, and you track them that way. So, and you'd get your wind speed determinations and such like that, and you're not doing the hazard flying that those guys that in the U.S. Air Force weather squadrons do by flying their airplanes directly into the hurricanes.
This is the part, David, of this whole topic that is so appealing to me, is this topic being unmanned vehicles and systems, and it's opening up a lot of creative thought, a lot of applications that we never used to consider, probably because we didn't have any devices that could function like this. And it's bringing out all kinds of new ideas and interesting applications. I think it's an exciting time.
It is. And I think we're going to do a good job of bringing to you the other side of it, instead of just the word drone and that being a predator and taking out terrorists in some small obscure part of the planet. So, I mean, we're talking about really cool and people thinking out of the box and stretching the boundaries of what aviation is.
And I think our next item is kind of along that vein. This is something that we saw in CNET, solar-powered Solara UAV could stay aloft for years. And so the idea here is that a UAV could replace or provide the same capabilities and functions as a satellite.
Atmospheric satellite flying for 5 years at 65,000 feet. We spend a lot of money. We had a previous guest on the Airplane Geeks, Matt Desch, and they're spending billions of dollars to put satellites in orbit for satellite communication, Iridium. In this case, you might not have to spend as much money to keep the aircraft aloft, and it could do the same kind of functions that a satellite would do, you know, telecommunications.
Right.
We all want those cell towers within our line of sight phones, but imagine having several UAVs at 65,000 feet that are constantly within line of sight of your cell phones.
Yeah.
And data streams. I mean, it would be huge.
So these have solar cell covered wings, which are over 160 feet across. So in that regard, it kind of looks like a glider. It has that kind of aspect ratio wing. What they're developing, and this is coming out of Titan Aerospace, they're developing these that would have a payload capability of around 70 pounds. And this would be, as you can imagine, much cheaper than launching a satellite into orbit. I think in the article, David, they say I think they're shooting for about a price tag of about $1 million per vehicle,
which is pennies to communication companies. I mean, this is an incredible cost savings, and you're putting it up for 5 years, and then you're bringing it down, servicing it up, and then sending it up for another 5 years. It's not like it's going to fall out of the sky in 5 years. So it's you and getting 10 or 15, 20 years out of something that cost you $1 million. That's just bonus money.
Sure, for sure.
All right. Speaking of throwing money at drones, our next article from CBS News. Colorado ordinance would okay shooting down drones. Deer Trail, Colorado, population of 559, will provide you a $25 license to shoot down any drone you see. And should you complete the process, you would get and bring back the bounty, you'd get $100. This was proposed by resident Philip Steele and is currently under consideration in Deer, Colorado. So what do you think, Max? Should we go out and get our drone licenses?
Well, as a sporting event or activity, I think it's probably a lot of fun. I mean, I sort of envision something like skeet shooting or trap shooting, except that instead of a clay pigeon that has no intelligence, you've got a UAV that is trying to avoid you. And maybe from that standpoint, this concept might have some interesting applicability. But
yeah, but that's not where they're trying to get
at. That's not where they're trying to get. And there's a quote from Steele, the resident who proposed this. It says, "We don't want a surveillance society here." And I mean, I can understand sort of the concern, and I think we've talked about it a little bit in the past that some people have with these, particularly these small. Small drones that can buzz your house, look in your windows, watch you in the backyard, whatever. A lot of people have some strong feelings about that, some reservations about how that impacts their privacy. And, you know, so this is not the way to deal with that, obviously. And in fact, the FAA is not very pleased with this at all, are they, David?
No, and this is where it really gets funny is the article that we got that has the response was actually from Field and Stream, one of those great hunter magazines.
Right.
And the FAA has basically said, no, you can't do this, folks. You can't go out shooting airplanes, which for all intents and purposes, a UAV is. And we don't want to encourage the behavior that people going out with their guns, taking pot shots at UAVs. And because if anyone's been near a major city here in the States, one of the worst things that people do is they fire their guns in the air on New Year's Eve. And what comes up must come down. So if people miss, you're going to have bullets falling back down onto the population. So I don't think that this is a prudent way to work against surveillance and what people observe as the negative aspects of UAVs.
No, and David, even if you do hit the thing, instead of the bullets coming down, you've got the bits and pieces of the aircraft coming back down, and that can represent a hazard to life and property as well. And I think that's another concern of the FAA. But I do think this points out that this privacy issue is not something that can be avoided. And folks in the unmanned industry and the government need to work through this in a way that, you know, at least is palatable for, you know, for everyone. I don't know what that is. I also don't know if that's one of the charters of the task force that the FAA commissioned to look at UAVs in the commercial airspace.
I think they're looking at them as aircraft integrating into the airspace. what that aircraft does and how it retains data or gathers data or what data it gathers is not part of the charter that the FAA was given. I think that will be done by states and the federal government in other aspects. So I think it's something we'll be discussing for the next couple of years on as people figure out good, bad, and indifferent. And a lot of this involves data.
It does. I mean, there's a saying out there that's usually applied in the sort of the computer realm, which is that privacy is dead. Get over it. And, you know, this is another example of privacy issues that people don't want the issue to be dead in many cases. And, you know, I think all it'll take is for some popular case where the capabilities of a UAV are misused in some way that, you know, will get a lot of press and generate a lot of discussion.
Discussion.
Yeah. But so I don't know if that will occur first or if some kind of standards will be established first that would tend to prevent that from happening. Don't know. We'll see, I guess.
But you know what, Max? I guess it's that time. Boy, 30 minutes goes quick, doesn't it?
It really does, David. There's so much to talk about. I think that'll kind of wind up this episode of the UAV Digest. We invite everyone to take a look at the website, theuavdigest.com. Subscribe in iTunes if that's your favorite method for subscribing to podcasts. Also, if you're in iTunes and you'd like to leave us a review or a rating, that would be really helpful. That really does do a lot towards helping other people find the show, so we would appreciate that.
And if you'd like to leave us email feedback, you can send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. And if maybe you are in the industry and you might want to come on and talk about your UAV or something like that, give us an email there and maybe we can make something happen, because we do want guests besides just the weekly news, like we had last week with Jamie. I think a good mix would be great. The one thing I've discovered over the last couple of weeks doing all the research for it is the UAV community is extremely passionate about what they do. And we want to be involved with that. So definitely send us an email and follow us on Twitter. And we look forward to seeing you next week. So from Philadelphia, this is David.
And from Hartford, this is Max.
Thanks.